There's no stronger wind blowing than the one that blows tonight up the canyon from the desert. Hey, and you don't know wrong from right. Don't give a damn about your convictions or what duty you endorse. You wrap your abstractions and I'll blow you plumb off course. You better run.
You guys ready to do this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Let's do it. All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Kayak Nerds. Today, well, I guess my name is Ryan. We'll start with that. And I'm here with my co-host, Alan. We are the Kayak Nerds. I go by Digital Cowboy on Instagram. And Alan, do you want to do a little introduction for yourself?
Sure. I'm Alan. I live here in Salida, and I own and operate Canyon River Instruction, where we do all manner of river instruction, swiftwater, and rafting primarily on the Arkansas River. It's a fun and busy year. And that's me. And we have our very special guest, good friend Tommy Graham, with us today. And Tommy, if you want to tell us about yourself and what you do.
Yeah. Hey, everyone. My name's Tommy Graham. Thanks, Alan and Ryan, for having me on the podcast. Looking forward to this. But I'm the owner of Whitewater Attainment. So Whitewater Attainment is a kayak and river rescue school here in Colorado. And we teach kayaking to anyone from a never ever to advanced paddler, as well as do swiftwater rescue training for anyone in any type of craft on the river. So that's kind of my summer gig. I also work as a trainer for the American Canoe Association. So I train and certify new kayak and swiftwater rescue instructors.
And I think you did that for both Alan and myself, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, definitely did. It's awesome. Kind of coming full circle here.
Yeah. Super good.
Yeah. And then my winter gig, I'm a co-owner of a company called BV Mountain Adventures that operates out of Buena Vista, Colorado. And we take people backcountry skiing and also teach avalanche education, primarily the AIRE, American Institute of Avalanche Research and Education. It's a long acronym, avalanche curriculum. So yeah, it's fun. Get to be outside year round and I don't know, can't complain.
Awesome. Yeah, that sounds pretty good. Yeah, I want to throw in there that Alan and I think both got our kayak instructor certifications from Tommy. Is that right, Alan?
That would be right. Yep. Some years apart. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably
pretty many years apart. I just got mine and you, how long have you had yours, Alan? Let's go there.
I don't know. What, 5 years? 5 years now?
Yeah. Yeah.
Somewhere in there. You need an update, right?
Somewhere in there, yeah. I think perhaps, Tommy, we could discuss doing an update later in the summer if it works out.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I also did my swiftwater with Tommy, which was awesome. Did that at the end of last year. And then I also did my avalanche AIRE 1 course, which was also awesome with Tommy. I've done so many things with you. So
yeah, a lot of
glad to have you on.
Yeah. Glad to have you in them all, for sure.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Cool. Well, that kind of brings us back around. In all of these classes that we've taken together, you know, we talk a lot about risk assessment on the river and what we do to mitigate that risk and what we do to understand that. When we hear that that risk assessment has not turned out so well, you know, in other cases, and so we all want to understand what the successes were, what the failure points might have been. And it got me thinking that actually after I took the AIRE 1 course with you, Tommy, in the avalanche world, there's a huge value placed on understanding accidents and reporting accidents and sharing those with the community. You know, obviously you're redacting the names and things like that, but you're understanding the circumstances and the whys and the what fors and what led up to it. And so there's a really solid conversation, I think, that happens in the avalanche world. And I really appreciated that when I took that class from you and just understanding how that happens and how that works. And I don't think it happens so much in the whitewater world. you know, American Whitewater and I think, was it Charlie Wallbridge perhaps, aggregates a lot of that kind of information, but there's not a lot of just kind of public discourse. I think it's kind of shoved aside and the community doesn't really talk about when accidents happen. And that's kind of my feeling. And I'd like to know what your feelings on that might be. And if you see it the same way and kind of what are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I know we actually kind of chatted on this a little bit before the podcast, or our recording today anyway. It actually inspired me to kind of go take a look at some stuff on both sides of things, the avalanche world, as well as kind of the American Whitewater page and the national kind of accident database on there. But from what I saw, believe it or not, I think the river world is kind of stepping up its game as far as accident reports go. Especially kind of in the last couple years, I've actually seen, like, if there was a boating fatality, that type of thing, that there's a decent kind of description going on, and like even a part where there's like lessons learned and stuff like that, and found a pretty quite a few kind of pretty in-depth accident reports there, which I wasn't aware of until kind of poking around in there a little bit over the last few days. So mm-hmm. That was kind of cool. I guess some differences that I've seen more so like in the ski world or backcountry skiing and snowboarding world and the river world is maybe a little bit more kind of like some openness about kind of sharing these accidents and lessons learned, as well as kind of building or bringing the community around it a little bit. And, you know, it's kind of part of being a backcountry traveler to, you know, go on the CAIC webpage here in Colorado and take a read of, you know, a local accident report and seeing what you learn from it and stuff like that, and maybe chatting about it with your friends. And I guess I see a little bit less of that in the river world. So, you know, a little bit less talking about like what happened, you know, maybe pulling some lessons learned out with our peer group of boaters and stuff like that. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what I had seen, in that Abbey One course, is that there's an amazing structure, and platform already in place, right, to share that information and to discuss it. And, just haven't seen that on the riverside.
Yeah. Not as much. I would agree with that for sure. At least not as much like open communication about it, if that mm-hmm. makes sense.
Sure.
So I think a lot of the info is there. Like if you want it on the AW database. But yeah, I think, I'm not sure what it is, just maybe some form of cultural difference where, we're less apt to talk about it in the river community.
I just pulled up the database and I am thoroughly impressed. This is extremely detailed. There are stats. You can search accidents by water level, by what class it happened in, by fatal or private trip or commercial trip. I had no idea what this was here. And this is comparable to like the, what's the snow forecasting site, Tommy?
CAIC or avalanche.org would be kind of the national one.
Yeah, mm-hmm. This is really, I mean, I don't want to say on the same level, but it's on the same level. This is, and I think a lot of this too is, you know, with avalanches, you're kind of thinking about where you're going and you're planning your route and you're looking at the danger for that day. And it's not that different than like the class system for rivers. I mean, there's five classes, just like there is with avalanches in terms of danger levels. And American Whitewater now has their page with like, you know, labeled classes. You can look at every river. It's, you're planning your route, and that's kind of what you're open for, you know, it's starting to be pretty comparable.
Definitely. And that's kind of a good point, you know. I think kind of both sports require us to kind of assess what degree of risk we're taking on, you know, by doing a certain ski tour, doing a certain run on the river, that type of thing. And requires us to plan ahead, and all that stuff. but kind of some, I guess, some differences in like kind of assessing your degree of risk on the river versus in the backcountry. I would say like in the avalanche world, a lot of things are out of our control, if that makes sense, right? So we have a persistent slab avalanche problem, something like that. You know, we can kind of see see what that is, decide what slope it's on. Maybe it's everywhere, and decide like, hey, we're going to go into avalanche terrain or not go into avalanche terrain, kind of coming up with that by assessing kind of our degree of risk.
Right.
The river world is a little bit different. We can actually influence and control quite a bit of stuff. You know, having appropriate equipment, the right kind of boat for the run, as well as our own kind of training, which also kind of reduces our vulnerability, if that makes sense, right? We might be able to be like, yeah, that's a pretty big hole over there, but I really feel like I have the skill set to avoid it. So,
which isn't so true of the snow world. You can't be like, well, it's an extreme avalanche day, I'm just going to avoid it.
Yeah. So,
set it off and see what happens.
Yes. There's definitely some kind of differences, in both of the worlds as like coming to that, like kind of, you know, what's this like degree of risk we're taking on for the day or whatever, you know, as well as like kind of in the voting world, we might decide like, yeah, I think we can run the numbers, today. It's a high flow or something like that. Like, yeah, could be bad if I end up out of my boat, but again, I've been practicing my role for years. I'm feeling really solid with my boating skill set, and likely I'm going to walk away okay, just because I have those skills, right?
Right.
Whereas, yeah, in the ski world or backcountry ski world, I could be a really, really fantastic skier, that type of thing. I could be wearing like an airbag pack, that also kind of reduces my vulnerability. But if I ski, avalanche prone slope on the wrong day, I might not be walking out of there. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, very true. And do you think just the option, from a kayaker's point of view, of just being able to walk around something that you're not feeling comfortable with, but otherwise complete the run, that plays into it as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's pretty similar to like, hey, I'm avoiding avalanche terrain. Hey, I'm going to walk around this rapid today. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we can definitely manage our risk in both environments, but yeah, just a bit different. So.
So you want to know an interesting statistic? I was able to pull up, both the CAKE website accident report and the American Whitewater, website accident reports, and we have I've got fatalities up for both sports. From 1950 to 2020, Whitewater accident and fatality reports almost 2,000 fatalities, 1,985, and CAKE, it's divided out, but it's below 700 fatalities in the same time frame. For avalanches, and 293 of those are in Colorado. But it's interesting because we talk about avalanches and we're like, I mean, I don't want to say what you're saying is avalanches are more dangerous, but you know, they're more unpredictable. So you think there'd be less or more deaths there, but it's kind of the opposite case.
Well, yeah, that's a cultural.
Just that's an interesting statistic. Go ahead, Alan.
Yeah, I was saying that's that almost sounds like a cultural difference, right? Because whitewater and avalanche terrain, both dangerous, potentially, right. Both gear intensive, both needing a very particular skill set to understand what you're doing and to manage that risk. But I think in the avalanche world, you have much more likelihood of having gone folks going through a real rescue class, like an ARRI class or something similar, or a accident avoidance type of training. Yeah. So I don't know. I feel like in the whitewater world, and I think it's changing And Tommy and I, or yeah, I'm sorry, Ryan and I, we talked about this on our last podcast a little bit. I think it's changing a little bit in the number of folks I see coming to us for swiftwater rescue training. And I know, Tommy, you're seeing a ton of folks coming to you for swiftwater rescue training as well. So I think that culture is changing slowly. But I think it has always been a feature of traveling in the backcountry in avalanche terrain. And I don't know, maybe I'm wrong there, but maybe that has something to do with it as well.
I think kind of, Alan, what you're saying, that the educational component is actually a pretty big thing, you know? If you look at a lot of the AW accident reports, you'll see a large amount of them are people not wearing a PFD, not wearing a helmet, and maybe just kind of more on the unaware side of the conditions mm-hmm. that they were putting themselves into.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's pretty hard to get yourself into avalanche terrain. And it's pretty easy to just get in a river. And I think that's probably the difference we're seeing.
Quite possibly.
And just kind of thinking about the United States, like there's a lot of like low head dams all over throughout the Midwest and everywhere. And mountains and avalanche terrain are a little bit harder to come by.
There's a lot of low head dams on here, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, that's a lot of the accident reports are like low head dam, wasn't wearing a PFD.
Yep, which is crazy.
So yeah, I think there's a big kind of educational gap for sure there. Where, you know, like we said, our backcountry skiers might be taking the effort to go and get some type of training. Whereas our person maybe, you know, kayaking on a little river in Nebraska or something like that, might not be getting that type of education about what they need to know to keep themselves safe out there.
Yeah. Sorry to keep throwing statistics at you, but foot entrapment is only 3% of deaths, 53 people in the last 70 years.
Oh, wow.
That's kind of surprising, because we definitely, that's a huge topic that we teach to, and how to avoid it. In swift water for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, really that right there is part of every single, talk that a raft guide gives before their customers get in the boat. They talk about foot entrapment and how to avoid it.
Well, maybe it's doing their job. Maybe people aren't standing up in the river, and that's why the stats so low.
Right.
Yeah.
Crazy. What's the leading cause, if I might ask?
Flush drowning by raft, private boating.
Huh.
I don't like. Can somebody explain to me what flush drowning means? Because it seems like there's a fair number of different ways that could happen.
That I would say kind of constitutes from a long swim. Would you agree, Alan, where you're just in the water for such a long amount of time before any type of rescue or self-rescue is able to happen, and you just get tired and wear out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree, because you're in that situation. You've got, if you're not used to it, you don't know how to swim aggressively and self-rescue, and B, you don't know how to time your breathing for going through waves or other hydraulics or other features. And so you're kind of trying to breathe, trying to keep your head over the water, and just every step of the way, your airway is being, you know, pounded with by the river. Over time, I would think that would add up. Go ahead.
Go for it. I just Googled it, and then flush drowning says repeated dunking and or being hit by waves causes a swimmer to aspirate water, compromising the airway.
Yep.
I didn't know that. I thought it was something else.
Great definition.
Just a prolonged exposure to that whitewater environment where you can't control the timing of what's happening in your environment to how your body is breathing and totally. Wears you down.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's interesting. That's the number one statistic. Private boaters as well.
private boaters, very few commercial. Private boaters are 75% of fatalities. Commercials, 15.
Is there a statistic on PFD or no PFD?
Not on no PFD, but the PFD not worn is 13%. I guess that is the statistic. So 252 people in the last 70 years, which is 13% of all fatalities, have not been wearing a PFD.
Hmm. Yeah.
Very few of those are whitewater kayakers. This is, we could go into stats forever, but you should go check out the American Whitewater accident page, because you're looking at lousy stats or scary stats, but it's good stuff to know.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's pretty impressive the amount of information they've trapped in there. And some accident reports are written up with a little bit more detail than others. I'm guessing that has to do with, you know, the people involved with the rescue or whatever, you know, getting with whoever at AW to kind of write that stuff up after the accident had happened or whatever it may be. Some of it may be just, you know, coming up with info on the best they can with, you know, news reports and stuff like that. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it's really impressive and a really super good resource.
Yeah. I think a lot of those stories we could learn from for sure. So
have you guys ever done that in a course? Have you ever kind of talked about when it goes seriously bad and how you might avoid that situation? I know you do, Tommy, but not, you know, you're not saying I don't think I've heard you talk about drowning that much.
Yeah, I definitely, in my Swiftwater courses, I show some videos of some pretty bad situations. Alan and Ryan, you probably remember those videos. Alan, you just saw them last week. As well as like how we could learn from them, you know, how we could maybe communicate better as a party of folks going down the river, you know, potentially have safety set up a little bit better. Stuff like that. So,
mm-hmm. You know, I've noticed, I show some of those too in my Swiftwater courses, and I've noticed that even with groups that are, you know, fairly new to the sport, definitely new to the concepts of Swiftwater rescue, and they're kind of taking a first Swiftwater course, but I'll still show them that video. And I like to ask a lot of questions like, what do you got? What went wrong here? You know, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? What could have been done in this situation, this aspect or that aspect of the whole scenario, that would have improved the outcome, both in time and materially improved it. And even folks who have never really spent a lot of time thinking about it, it always leads to a great conversation, and the ideas that they come up with, and you know, and how well folks can just look at that information and see just the little things that you could do to improve along the way. And it really makes me think that it's not difficult. It's just a matter of creating a environment and a culture that promotes those kinds of discussions early on in folks' river running careers.
So, Tommy, can I point it out before you say it? So in our avalanche class, I remember, I don't want to say everything we talked about was heuristics, but we spent a lot of time thinking about heuristics. And is that how you say it? And talking about how people get into situations because they don't want to say something, or it's too large a group, and I think on the river that can be really taken for granted. And I've been out paddling with a group of 20 people, and it's great fun, but you lose that small connection or that safety aspect because, you know, somebody just falls off the back and goes unnoticed or something like that. And it's just, I think that plays a larger part in whitewater than given credit for.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Heuristics are a really big thing, or also known as human factors. I don't know. I kind of relate it to just being human almost, you know. Yeah. We're emotional decision makers as humans, and it's kind of how we roll most of the time. If we can kind of take some of that emotion out of like needing to run this rapid because it's my only weekend that I have, or, you know, whatever that may be, we might be making some better decisions out there. So, and part of that too, you know, I might not know that I'm kind of falling for one of these human factor traps or whatever, but my buddies that I'm on the river with might be able to hold me accountable to some of that too. You know, like, hey, you looked a little bit shaky in that last rapid. This one's bigger, you know, how about we talk about this as a group? Stuff like that. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like it. Yeah. A lot of ways you can't even realize sometimes that things are not lining up in the best way.
Yeah.
Traveling with a group, training with a group, you know, so the folks that you boat with on hard stuff, you know them, you know how they boat, you can recognize when, as you say, your friend is looking a little shaky.
Absolutely. Another thing too, we said paddling as a group, training as a group, kind of debrief as a group too. You know, you got done with the run, maybe something happened, maybe something didn't, but you know, just kind of chatting through with your friends. When were you most exposed to risk on your river run? You know, what things went well? When did you communicate well? When was maybe your kind of on-water communication lacking? Those are all really good things to go through with your partners at the end. And I find I'm really, really good with my backcountry ski partners talking through that stuff, because we kind of teach it as a bit of a framework in these avalanche courses.
Right.
So people are a little bit more accustomed to it. And I don't know, if I'm out on the river with you and Alan, I'm more apt to say like, yeah, same time next week and just head out, you know? So, so yeah, I just don't think it's like built as much into our culture.
I don't want to make light of a serious topic, but I think my most dangerous situation is that I've been paddling a creek boat lately instead of something fun. I can't splat. Like, what am I supposed to do? Danger to fun.
Fair enough.
Just kidding. So I'm loving the creek
boat. So it goes. Well, Tommy, I wanted to ask if you feel like it's something that needs to be addressed. What would you like to see kind of change in the industry or in the culture going forward? And how can we as instructors or, you know, just out as people who care about making the river a safer environment for everybody, what can we do to help that process?
Man, I think kind of just promoting a culture of open discussion, as well as, you know, if we're paddling with our group of buddies and, you know, training for some type of big paddling mission or expedition, just, you know, good communication within that group, I think is a huge, huge thing for sure. And yeah, I think kind of like I said, yeah, just promoting open communication about stuff. And I would say maybe a hair less shaming, like, I don't know. The booty beer thing is a pretty funny thing for sure, I think. But yeah, you know, people are less apt to talk about maybe why they swam.
Interesting.
If they swam, stuff like that.
I totally agree with you on that.
So I was watching Bren Orton just put out a video like yesterday talking about the booty beer. Somebody swam in some class five and had to drink a booty beer. And he was like, I don't know what you think of the booty beer, but it takes a serious situation and it makes it light and funny. And at the time I was like, yeah, it's like a good decompression. But to your point, Tommy, it does. It kind of takes, like, maybe it's a good thing that it's a little bit serious. Like, maybe you should think about what happened and figure it out. And I'm sure they do. They're, you know, they're professional kayakers and whatnot, but interesting.
One more thing, take away the booty beer. That's all fine and good, you know.
Yeah.
But maybe talk about what brought you to drinking that booty beer.
Right. Have you done one of those, Tommy?
Oh yeah.
Where'd you swim?
Back in the Midwest, kind of the North and South Shore Lake Superior, there's a community of boaters I was with there. You actually do a drain plug beer, which might be slightly more gross.
Oh God, out of the back of your boat?
Yeah.
So that's why you should paddle playboats. No drain plug. Ha ha. Huh. Wow, that's nuts.
Yeah. Different cultures.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard of that one. That's too funny.
That sounds vile. I'm picturing all the nasty water in the back of my boat right now.
Oh boy.
I gotta know, Tommy, what were you swimming? Because it must have been epic.
Man, trying to remember what I swam up there. Something of reasonable size for sure. It was definitely a beat down that led to the swim, and wow, probably a little bit of poor judgment on making a move that led to getting in the hole, that led to the beat down. So we're doing it. We're discussing it.
Yeah.
That is all. That's what led me to drinking a beer out of my drain plug.
Oh man. What about you, Alan? Have you ever done one?
I have. I feel like the last time, I'm not a huge proponent of it. I like, you know, I'm the guy in the crowd who's like, if someone's going to do one, I'm like, no, you know, you really don't need to do that. Don't feel obligated.
Yeah.
But no, I did for sure. And I'm thinking that the time I'm remembering was actually over on the Animas when I was living in Durango. I swam something up there. I think it was just a really shorter swim, but it was in Rockwood, and I didn't go very far, but a swimming did happen. So,
oh shoot. It's going to happen to me one of these days.
So it goes.
I've swam once, and it was like day three in a kayak.
Oh
yeah.
Reed spent a whole bunch of time working on rolling with me, and I was like, all right, I can roll. I'm never getting out of this thing.
A great mindset to have.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. It's been really nice, honestly.
Heck yeah.
Awesome.
But someday it'll happen. Someday I'll drink that disgusting booty beer.
Yeah, I think we can agree. Keep doing booty beers, but talk about why you had to do it.
Like that's it. True.
Yep, I agree.
That's true. Because really,
do it for the gram.
We're all just in between swims.
Yep. Yep.
Well,
what
did you say?
Oh, I said hopefully far between them.
Oh, yes, agreed. Hopefully very far between them. Yep, yep.
I don't know if Clear Creek comes up, I might try and go get that a little more in between.
Well, it's trying to come up right now. It's like slowly creeping up.
Trying to. It went down a fair amount today.
Yeah, it was cold.
Peak of the arc?
Yep.
Nice. Yeah.
It's at 135 right now.
Oh, yeah. Don't go up there yet.
Nope. Not yet. What I am doing is I'm going to, they call it Poo Fest, which is a terrible name. But I'm going to Pooterfest this weekend and going to paddle the Pooter, which I'm really excited about.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Heck yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I talked with Kyle at RMA. Yeah. Yeah, he was in the New Mexico instructor course with us. Uh-huh. But yeah, sounds like a good time. They got some property to like cook out and camp on down that way.
Yep. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I wish I wasn't teaching. I'd be there.
Dang it.
Same.
Are they doing the Stevens Down race?
I think I'm going to try. I've never raced before. This weekend I watched everybody do numbers race, and that seemed like a good time and like some really fast people. But yeah, I know I'm feeling, I don't know if you know, Tommy, but I just picked up a Dagger Phantom and I'm feeling much faster and I would like to go try it out.
Nice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Go fast, take chances.
Yeah. See if I can get those swims a little closer.
But it is a whole lot easier to swim when you're out of breath. So you'll have that going for you.
It's very true. Anyway. Well, cool.
All right. Tommy, do you want to add anything else to that discussion? Any last thoughts on keeping the river safe and making it safer?
Yeah, I think, you know, get the education always be practicing your skills. You know, I think there's a direct correlation to, you know, the probability and consequences that you're up against by just having a bomber roll and being in reasonable shape to be boating the water that you're wanting to get on. So, you know, take it seriously and have fun.
Not too seriously.
Not too seriously. Yeah.
Well, cool.
Love it.
Thanks for being on today, Tommy. I've been itching to get this episode going for a long time. You're a pleasure to speak with, and I hope we get to do it again.
Yeah, definitely. Was super stoked when you all invited me onto here, and yeah, hopefully we get to boat quite a bit this summer and spring, and yeah, maybe we'll do another appearance on the podcast here.
Yeah, I think that'll have to happen.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thank you all.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Thanks for being here, Tommy.
Yeah.
Better roll.